This episode is brought to you by Liquid IV. Feeling thirsty? You might already be dehydrated. Enter Liquid IV. Behind every great-tasting sip is a science-backed formula of electrolytes and nutrients made to quickly replenish fluids lost from sweat. Every stick is powered by 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. Redefine the refresh with Liquid IV, also available in sugar-free. Tear, pour, live more. Visit us at liquidiv.com.
Hi friends, and welcome back to another episode of Open House, a fresh, fun, and real podcast where I, Louise Rumble, invite you inside the therapy room with me to learn from some of the very best psychologists, therapists, and sex and intimacy coaches that I have found. No topic is off the table, no question too juicy, and no experience too shameful. At Open House, everyone is welcome. And we're on a mission to develop a new mental health experience for all, because we believe that true happiness is coming home to yourself under the layers and layers of you that society has told you to be. As ever, please remember that this podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and you should always seek professional medical help when necessary. Now, let's get into it, and I'll see you on the other side. Hi, everyone. I'm so happy to have you back here for another episode with me and neuroscientist Emily McDonald, also known as Em on the Brain. We are like really obsessed with each other, and we've been trying to work out a way that we can hang out together in person. We actually had the craziest moment like 3 weeks ago where she messaged me being like, you should come and visit me in Florida. And then literally 30 minutes later, one of my friends messaged me saying that they had just rented a house in Florida. Then an hour later, I was driving to the airport. We had a rental car. I opened up the arm thing in the middle of the seats. I don't know what that's called. I opened it. I don't know why. I wasn't looking for anything. It was a rental car. Like, of course it was empty. It wasn't empty. There was a boarding pass that said Cancun to Florida. The universe is screaming at me that I need to go to Florida. Maybe you will see Em and I doing more stuff together. Who knows? There is definitely something there. But most of all, I'm so excited to share today's episode with you. I love that we have a neuroscientist talking about the subconscious mind, because often in the manifestation space, even though a lot of it is and can be science-backed, it also can get a very bad name as well. So I love that you can trust today's episode and you can come away really knowing and really being clear on what the subconscious mind is, why it drives us all day, every day, and why our wiring from the past continues to drive our future until we decide to step in and reprogram our subconscious mind. I always think it's so interesting, the analogy of the computer, right? It always says, do you want to download new software? Do you want to download new software? Same as an iPhone. And we normally have to say yes, because otherwise at some point the software will stop working and we can't use the computer in the way that we want. Things get slow, things don't work well. That is the same as how we are as humans. But the problem is that we don't get asked if we want to upgrade our software. So we don't. And then we end up getting slow and things are heavy and we can't work and function in the way that we want to. If you haven't already heard, we are launching There She Glows. It starts this Sunday. So there's literally 5 days to go until we close the doors. We have created a 63-day calendar for you to change your life. It's a 9-week journey. It is 63 days to a life level up. We teach you everything you need to know about your nervous system, about the subconscious mind. We also teach you how to subconsciously reprogram. And on top of that, we take you through a journey over 9 weeks where you will identify every single limiting belief in almost every area of your life. And then we will physically help you rewire them. Every single week, you will get 3 to 4 healing videos. I'm talking theta meditations, EFT tapping, breath work, hypnosis, somatic shaking, meditation, nervous system regulation. The list goes on and on. We give you the tools to do as well as learn. So not only is this not just a one topic, one practitioner course, you get 6 people, including me, 9 live sessions, all available on pre-record every Sunday, and 32 plus healing videos. You literally get everything you need to level up your life. You get a whole life audit, a whole life level up. The different modules cover self-confidence, self-belief, self-esteem, love, dating, attachment, money, beauty, masculine and feminine energy, body image and eating habits, and more. We literally will identify every limiting belief you have. We will release them and then we will help you rewire them. I'm biased, but if you want to call this course the miracle course, you can do that. It's only $298 for the entire 9-week journey. If you spend $5 a day at Starbucks, you're going to spend $315 a month. So the choice is yours. If you're ready for a life level up, this is for you. head over to the show notes before we close doors for the very last time. You get lifetime access if you buy it at this $298 price, but once we have closed the doors and completed the course, you will never be able to get access to it for less than $698. Everything is linked in the show notes. Truthfully, subconscious reprogramming has changed my life. I spent more than $10,000 on therapy, every type of practitioner, and this is the best of the best, the step-by-step process on how to actually level up your life in just 63 days. Hoping you come and join us. Either way, listen to this episode. You will learn so much. And there will definitely be some information that you can take away and implement on your own if you're not really ready to step into that future version of you. Okay, let's get into the episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Open House Podcast. I am so happy to have Em on the Brain back with me again today. Every time you guys listen to an episode that we've done together, you're always sharing it to social media. You're always saying, this is so good. I love this episode. And I love this girl. So I'm so happy that we're going to be back here again today talking. And we're going to be talking about the subconscious mind. Now, this is something that I have been obsessed with, the subconscious mind, for months. It is all that I'm reading about at the moment. I'm reading The Biology of Your Beliefs by Bruce Lipton at the moment. And the more and more that I get into this, not only do I realize this is why I've seen substantial shifts in my life because I've been working with my subconscious mind, but I also realize that this is why other people aren't seeing substantial shifts in their life. And I think that's something we're going to talk about today, because I know how frustrating it is when you're trying to do the work, but you feel like your brain and your body are against you. So hi, Em, how are you? Welcome back.
Hi, it's so amazing to be back on here. I'm so excited. And honestly, the subconscious mind is totally one of my favorite topics. So when you reached out, I was like, I have to come on. We have to make this happen. We're both so busy. But I was like, we need to talk about this because I've been obsessed for years. I remember my very first neuroscience class in my PhD, I walked up to my professor who happened to be the head of the neuroscience department. I was like, do you think that if we were just wired differently, like subconsciously, we could fly? And he literally said yes. So I was like, okay. And ever since, I was just like obsessed with the way we're wired and like how that affects like our day-to-day lives. And I love that you mentioned like, it's why a lot of times we feel like we're doing so much of the work and we can't reap the results, because I have a saying that I say, like, we are always manifesting. It's not just when you're visualizing. It's not just when you're journaling or when you're doing your affirmations, but you are always manifesting through the way we're wired, through the way that like you're wired and your belief system and all of it. So I think the subconscious mind is super important. And I think we'll probably both end up agreeing today that it's really like the subconscious self, because the mind is also connected to the body. And we'll go through that later too.
Exactly. And before we start, I'm so happy that you just mentioned manifestation, because I will admit that in my 20s, I was like a big skeptic of manifestation, because every time I tried things, it just never worked, right? And what I've learned since learning about the subconscious mind is that's because I had all these limiting beliefs that were holding me back. And like a couple of visualizations like here and there wasn't strong enough to override my wiring. But now since I've rewired, like even last week, I did a tapping session on money. And then the next day I got an email with a really great amount of money coming in. And I was like, this is because I'm releasing those beliefs that are like blocking me from letting stuff in. And I know we're going to talk about that later in today's episode, because it was when people taught me how to rewire, what that means, what practices you can do to rewire, what you can do to release the limiting beliefs. That was really when I saw everything start to change. But I think let's just start with what is the subconscious mind, because I'm sure loads of us have heard about this statistic, which is 95% of your day-to-day life is controlled by your subconscious mind. But it feels a bit weird when you hear that, because you're like, no, I wanted to get a coffee, so I got up and I got a coffee. Let's talk about what that statement really means, and I guess particularly from the position of a neuroscientist.
Okay, yes. So what is the subconscious mind? This is totally kind of a confusing topic, and it's a term that gets thrown around a lot because it's not a specific brain area. Like the subconscious mind, it really encompasses a lot. And there are just a few examples. Like I would say the poster child of the subconscious mind is the reticular activating system. And that's because the reticular activating system is deep in the brainstem, which for me immediately, even unconscious mind almost, because that's home to brain areas that are in charge of like heart rate and blood pressure and breathing. Like it helps us stay alive while we sleep. And so it's very much not conscious awareness, but the reticular activating system is really important for taking in all of our sensory information. So all of everything we hear, everything we see, and then filtering it, and then kind of allowing us to perceive particular things depending upon our subconscious beliefs or the way we're wired or like our past traumas or even things like intentions that we set or goals that we set, which is why every single morning I like to set a particular intention when I wake up, because that tells my reticular activating system like, hey, let's look for this throughout the day. So that one is the reticular activating system, or the RAS, is really kind of like the prime example of the subconscious mind. But really what I think of as the subconscious mind is just the way we're wired and kind of like how we came to be the way we are. And our childhood played a huge role in the way we're wired. Our first 6 to 8 years of life played a huge role in the way that we're wired in our experiences. And we carry all of that with us. And now you talk a lot about this on the podcast where like it affects us while in our dating, when we're dating and we have these triggers or like attachment styles and like how were these developed, and they were developed or they started and came to be from our childhood. And why are they still affecting us? Because they're being stored in the subconscious mind. And like, that's not necessarily in a certain brain area, but it's in the way that we are wired. And so our habits are a really good example. I studied drug addiction in my PhD. And so a lot of what I studied was not being able to control your impulses and like cravings. And obviously the conscious mind, the voice that we control, is like, don't do it. Don't do it. But then sometimes that isn't strong enough to overpower the part of our brain that is wired the way it is. And it's been wired to learn to seek and drugs and all of that. And that's what happens. And relapse happens. So it's kind of like the subconscious mind is really, to me, just the way we're wired. And that's not just in the brain, that's in the entire body, because our nervous system isn't just the brain. We have a central nervous system, and then we also have a peripheral nervous system. So we have the brain and spinal cord, and then the peripheral nervous system, it goes all the way from the central nervous system to the tips of our toes and our fingertips. So it's our whole body.
I am so happy you've said that. There's already like three things that you've said that I think are really important. And the first one is you've referenced the unconscious mind as well. So you've got the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, and the unconscious mind. Before we go into some of the other things you've said about habits and wiring, because let's get into that, I want you to explain the difference maybe between the subconscious and the unconscious. And if we could explain to people like the kind of iceberg analogy, I think that's like a great way for people to understand what is going on.
Yes. Okay. So this is definitely going to be kind of a loose interpretation, because I think once you get between like subconscious and unconscious, it's very much like hasn't been a hard line drawn. But what I would say for unconscious, let's just start from the bottom. This is like unconscious is when we're asleep and like our heart rate, blood pressure, our lungs moving. And it's kind of very much like bodily activities that are happening. They don't require any sort of like consciousness. It's like our body is a sort of machine, if you will, and it's working for us all the time. And I like to talk to my body, and I like to send love to my cells and things. And I'm like, oh, I love you, cells. Like, thanks for working for me. So that's kind of like our unconscious, because we're not even necessarily being affected by it in our day-to-day lives. Like, it's not, even though we are, because like our ability to focus is going to be dependent upon our breathing and our heart rate and all of that. But it's not necessarily like something that requires any sort of conscious control at all. That's happening whether you're asleep, whether you're awake. To me, that's unconscious. So the subconscious mind is very much like we have our conscious mind, which is the I, right? So if you're sitting in meditation, for me, this is like how I picture it. So I'm sitting in meditation and I have this ability to control my thoughts. Well, the subconscious mind are the thoughts that are floating by that you observe, to me. So it's like what's happening in the background that I'm not necessarily being consciously aware of or controlling, but it's happening anyway. And it's like our habits, things that we're doing, like you said, getting up to go get a coffee. Well, why? Because you're tired. What made you think like, let's go get a coffee? Because I would never think that. I would think, let's go get a matcha. So you know what I mean? So it's like something is different between me and someone that decides to go get a coffee. And that difference is our wiring, our belief system. Because for me, I used to get up and go get a coffee. And then I learned like about regulating our hormones and cortisol and all of that. And now I'm like, okay, we don't drink coffee on empty stomach. And also I just prefer matcha. So now we're going to go for that instead. So now I have this new knowledge, new belief system, and this new habit that I have kind of wired in. And so if I'm tired, what's my brain immediately go to? My brain is like, let's go get a matcha. And so it's kind of thinking about the what is driving our habits and what is driving us to do everything we do. Because honestly, something that I'm talking about a lot in my coaching program that's coming out soon that I've been really thinking really deeply on is we are all so different. Like we walk around thinking that we are all, like we are all human beings, but every single person is wired so differently. Like we all had completely different experiences. We have completely different mindsets. And something that I like to really talk about with the subconscious mind too is the visual system and how that plays a role in our mindset. And we don't actually see the world as it is. Our eyes just take in these wavelengths of light. And then the image that's put together in the brain depends upon our mindset, our beliefs. Like people that see themselves differently in the mirror, they actually have differences in certain brain areas. So it's kind of just like, oh, wow. So the way that our brain is activating in the background is actually like providing a blueprint for how our conscious mind can go about our day to day. And so your conscious mind can only do so, it has to work with the blueprint that the subconscious mind is kind of providing for it, I guess is the best way to put it.
I love that coffee example. That is so good because even like this morning, I'm so busy today and I've actually stopped drinking coffee. It's a long story. I'm not going to go into it now. But I'm back in an old environment. So I'm in my parents' house and I'm in London, which is where I'm very used to working all the time and being on the brink of burnout. And today my head was like, get a coffee. You need a coffee. And I'd already had one coffee. And that was my new rule is like, I will only have a coffee because I'm handling jet lag. One in the morning to help spike my cortisol, to help wake me up. And my body was like, get a second coffee. And it is that voice that pops up. Also in dating, texting back. Don't text them back. They're not going to text me back. They're going to pick someone else. That voice in your head is really interesting to question, like, oh, is that actually coming from my wiring rather than from my conscious mind? Are you actually thinking that? Or is that wirings that have been firing year after year after year for as long as you can remember? I'd love to chat a little bit about how those wirings form. So you mentioned that by the years of 7 to 8, most of you are fixed. And we talk about that a lot on the podcast. But what does that actually mean? Is that like neural pathways, like nerves have connected and then you form a belief? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, two big things. Your coffee example, actually, it just a huge light bulb in my mind because when I was an undergrad, I studied learning and memory in kids and we actually did it depending upon the context. And I don't know if you knew this, but the hippocampus, the area of the brain really important for learning and memory, is the same brain area that creates a mental map of our environment. The same brain area is like mapping out our environment. And so we have such strong associations between our place in an environment and what we're learning. And so when you're back in an environment and like this is why like being in certain environments is one of the most important things to me. That's why I like to move and go new places because it allows me to start fresh because I don't have any prior learned associations. And you can literally rewire your mind so much easier if you go somewhere that your brain doesn't have these like habits formed in already. So that's like just a little fun fact. But as for like the childhood part, what it is, it's not that our brain is set in stone. We don't really experience a decrease in neuroplasticity until our brain matures, which is around 25 is what they say. And it's different for males and females, but around 25. But really what it is when we're children is that we have increased theta activity when we're young and also alpha activity. And when we have increased theta activity, neuroplasticity is higher when we have increased theta activity, which is kind of why I really like to do affirmations. And that's why hypnosis tracks work so well because they guide you into this deep trance-like state where theta brainwave activity is high. And then there can be increased learning during that time. And actually, we see a lot of theta activity in the hippocampus, the area of the brain for learning and memory. And so that's just really interesting. And I had a lot of friends that were studying that when I was in my PhD. And that's still something that people are looking into, like how can we increase theta activity to increase learning? So that's really fun. But another thing is the reason why the window between 0 and like 6 to 8 is so important is because we're actually born with the most connections in the brain we'll ever have. Like all of our neurons are like, our brain is like super connected. It's just like a, you could think of it as like a mega brain. And basically we're sponges during this time. And we are so just open to everything. And then as we start to learn, our synapse, like the connections start to prune away and we start to separate things in our minds and we start to understand like, oh, this is this. We understand things are different and there's contrast and there's groups. But before that, we don't really group things or understand that there's differences between things. And so basically all those connections start to prune away. And so that's why like our core beliefs form during that time, because those are the most formative years for the brain.
Okay, yes, I love this. I really want to talk about neuroplasticity and theta waves with you. But before we do, I just want to wrap out that point about associations, because you also gave me a light bulb moment, which is that when I gave up coffee in Mexico, I was in a new apartment. So there was nothing in that apartment. There was no coffee machine. There was no milk. There was no coffee beans. There was nothing, right? So when I wake up in the morning there, I'm not thinking about coffee because I've never had a coffee in that apartment. Whereas now I'm back. I must have walked this coffee machine in my parents' kitchen upwards of 500 to 1,000 times in my life. Like, we're a big coffee drinking family and we've been in this house for years. So it's so interesting because you also made me think about that comment, which is that you can't heal ultimately in the environment that broke you. Because if you are constantly around the people that are restoring these beliefs around you, or next to the person that you're in a situationship with, or next to the drug that you've been addicted to, those associations are going to be there. So before we move on to theta waves and brain waves, do you think that that's fair to say that the best way to form a new habit is to be away from the old habits that you're trying to break?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So actually in my addiction research, there's something called extinction training that we would do. And basically, like, it doesn't work as well in real life outside of research, just because there's so many factors that play into it. But basically what you do, and actually they do this with people that have like anxiety around like sharks or animals or water or elevators or whatever. But what they do is they expose you to the cue over and over again, but without the trigger, like without the actual, like, you know, you're actually going to be safe. And over time, you start to learn a new association. And our brains are association machines. They love to connect the dots between things. So that's why if you're trying to remember something, if you tie it to something like, oh, like I'm trying to remember an avocado was green, then I'll maybe like, I don't know, make up some silly rhyme. And then that association will help me remember it. And so I love that you said you can't heal in the environment that broke you, because it's so true. And we can't really break, like, there's no such thing as erasing something in our minds. Like, we can't do that. It's not a thing. We can't just like erase a memory, at least not right now. We can't just like zap something from our brains. But what we can do is what you did was you kind of let that old association of like coffee every day and that like habit, you let that just die out over time. And there's the saying, neurons that fire together, wire together, where over time, if you activate the same circuits in the brain, they get stronger. Well, it works in the opposite as well. So the longer you go without activating them, the weaker they get and the less likely you are to like fall victim to that habit again. But as soon as you're back in that environment, that coffee machine is a cue, and that cue delivers dopamine that then drives you and motivates you to go get the coffee. So you've just exposed yourself to a cue. And I think this is a beautiful example, actually, because I've been going to like hot yoga lately. And I had this realization when I was in yoga yesterday, because I learned really fast. So I've been getting really good. And I've been really proud of myself. But then yesterday, there were a bunch of new people that were wobbling a ton. And like, when you watch people wobble, it like kind of makes you wobble. And so but you know, what I said to myself, I was like, you know what though? You're not really good at yoga until you can be good at yoga watching people wobble. And so just to take into yours, like, you haven't really quit your coffee habit until you can look at that coffee machine and not get the coffee. So really, this is like the ultimate test. Like, this is when you can seal it in right now.
Yeah, you are right. That coffee habit is still there in my subconscious mind, right? Because it has fired so many times in my life. But I also do believe that it will disappear one day if that is the thing that I want to commit to. And you spoke previously about theta waves. And I want to get into brain waves now, because one thing that I've learned is being in my conscious mind and just saying, I don't want the coffee. I don't want the coffee. That is not the way that I'm going to change the coffee habit. Same as saying, like, I'm not in love with them. I'm not in love with them is not going to change someone falling out of love with the person they're trying to get over. What I have learned is that being in altered brainwave states and states of heart coherence and heart brain coherence and stuff like this can really increase the rewiring power and the ability to lay down those new pathways. So I'd love it if you could just give us a brief overview into the main types of brainwaves that we need to understand, and then maybe tell us a little bit more about which brainwaves are going to help us to build these new beliefs and rewire those subconscious ones?
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing is, yeah, I don't want to be in love with him anymore, or trying to do the habit like, I don't want the coffee, I don't want the coffee. What that's actually doing is actually wiring it in even deeper, because that saying, it's really funny when you start to think about like all the sayings and then really the science behind them, because they're so true. Like, where your focus goes, energy flows. What we really want to do, instead of focusing on breaking a habit, we want to focus on making a new one. Because like I said, you can't just erase something from the brain, and actually thinking about the habit you're trying to break is actually just wiring it in even deeper. And so what we want to do is replace it with something new. And exactly like you said, during times when theta brainwave activity is higher, we have a better ability to absorb this information and make it like part of our subconscious mind, especially with repetition. There are actually many, and it's been very kind of simplified, like in the charts that I show and stuff. There's delta waves, and then there's theta waves, and then there's alpha waves and beta and gamma. But really, there's always like tons of combinations of the different brainwaves all the time. And there's like crazy names for them, actually. So it's really not super straightforward at all. But there is research, like there's a particular study that I really like to point to all the time, where it's like they found increased frontal theta activity. So in the frontal lobe, and that the frontal lobe is what makes us human. It's our impulse control and helps us focus and learn and remember things. And it's like our executive functioning. So, you know, learning here in the prefrontal cortex is a pretty good way to do it. And then our hippocampus, the brain area really important for learning and memory, is in the temporal lobes, which is, I know you're really into tapping. And so that's actually thought to like work with those brain areas, which is really cool. But basically, they found that when there's increased theta activity, there's increased neuroplasticity. And so when you have this increased ability, like increased neuroplasticity basically just means we have an increased ability to rewire the brain and strengthen the new connections that we want to strengthen. And especially if they're kind of like, I like to just flip them in reverse. Or if I'm trying to break a coffee habit, I'll be like, oh, pick something else. Especially a lot of people do the phone scrolling in the morning. So I like to replace that habit with go listen to some affirmations in the morning instead. And it still will boost your dopamine, because affirmations still boost dopamine, and it'll help you like wake up and whatever, but you're not absorbing information on social media and letting that wire your mind. Because right when you wake up in the morning, you have increased theta activity, because as we're like shifting out of sleep, theta and alpha wave activity. And so we have lots of combination of brainwaves, but the theta brainwaves are like a science-backed thing, and it's the science behind hypnosis. And it's actually not just brainwaves. Like in hypnosis, I don't know if I've seen this with like research with tapping, but in meditation as well, we get like decreased activity in the default mode network of the brain, which is important, which the activity is high in that network when we have a mind wandering, or when we're imagining things, or if we're like overthinking. It's basically like thinking about our internal state. And if we have decreased activity there, that means we are more focused and we're not being distracted by outside information when we're more able to absorb the information being presented to us. And so if you are trying to do hypnosis or affirmations or some sort of brain rewiring, it's really helpful to do it or have these suggestions being put onto us while we're in more like meditative or hypnotic states, because that's when we can absorb them more.
Okay. I love what you said about the combination of brainwaves, because I did not know that. I thought you were just in one brainwave. So I think everyone will have learned something today. And I also love what you said about the replacement, because my whole life, ever since I run a business and had a social media channel, you wake up in the morning and you're like, what happened whilst I was asleep? How badly did I get trolled? Did I get canceled? Have I got a new brand deal in my inbox? It's like, I've just always wanted to pick up my phone. And before being on social media, it was in my business. It was the same thing. Did something good happen? Did something bad happen? Did someone quit? Did someone leave? And I wired this fear so deeply that it was like every single morning when I woke up, I had to pick up my phone. And I tried to break it for so many years. And the only reason that I have finally been able to replace it is because I set up a replacement. And I started it so small. It was like, I am not going to touch my phone, but I'm going to walk to the kitchen. I'm going to fill up my Stanley cup. I'm going to put some electrolytes in it. And then I'm going to go and pick up my phone. And I added stuff on day, like last week, I literally got up, did my drink, went outside, got the light on my eyes, did some like prana movements. Then I did a 10-minute meditation and 5 minutes of tapping. And I was like, holy fuck, I did it. I did it. And I repeated that. I was like, I've done this finally. So yay for me. And I love that thing about replacement. That is such a good idea. Mm-hmm. What I also want to talk to you about is the specific activities to increase your theta activity in the brain. You've mentioned stuff like meditation, visualization, Let's talk about what you think are the most effective, and let's talk about hypnosis as well.
Yeah, so I think meditation is like my favorite way to do this. Obviously, I really like to meditate, and then while like toward the end of my meditation or like right after I'm done meditating, I'll like say some intentions for my day, like what I want to get out of the day. But also hypnosis is a great way to do it. And like I said, it turns down activity in the default mode network. And then it also actually turns down activity in the anterior cingulate cortex, which kind of just helps us like be less anxious or worried or have resistance to the information that's coming toward us. Basically, we can just be more open to the new positive suggestions. And there's actually science to show if we don't believe it or we have resistance to like what we're trying to say, then it can actually be detrimental to us and harmful to us. And we don't want to do that. Actually, when I first started doing affirmations, what I would do is I would go on a walk every morning to get outside, get my sunlight, and I would walk. And actually walking, we do subconscious bilateral eye movements. And it's similar to what EMDR does. And it turns down activity in the amygdala, which is really important for like fear and negative emotional states and anxiety. And so if you have decreased activity there, then you're more able to receive this information without having anxiety or fear or like a negative reaction. Like, no, I can't. I'm not the creator of my life. Like, you know what I mean? You're less likely to have that. Then you're also just outside and walking and you're happier anyway. And so that's another way I like to absorb information. A lot of times it's just going on walks because we get into kind of like a flow type state in the brain, like optic flow also like helps emulate, you know, brain flow and our brain waves. So just doing things. That's why like we get a lot of like shower thoughts and stuff like that, because being in the shower is kind of another way to relax our brain waves. And so I think I haven't seen any like brainwave activity on tapping, so I can't say anything there, but I know it does reduce cortisol. And so reducing stress is really helpful. Oh, I have to mention one of my favorite things that I always love to talk about is my frequencies. And so I like theta waves or binaural beats. So like on YouTube or on Spotify, you can listen to something in the theta range. And I can't remember the exact frequency range of that right now. But if you just search like theta binaural beats or theta isochronic tones, there's something that happens called brainwave entrainment, where the cells in our ears that are activated actually are organized by frequency in the ear. And so we hear different neurons, brain cells are activated depending on the frequency that we hear. And then also binaural beats, it can just like help entrain our brainwaves. So if you listen to delta waves to fall asleep, you can increase your delta brainwave activity and that will help you fall asleep and stay asleep. So it's similar to that, but with theta brainwaves, you can increase theta waves and then maybe wire in some new belief systems with that music.
Okay, I love that we are getting into the ways that people can do this. And it's really interesting that you said meditation is your favorite. I love the reference to walking. And I also love what you said about the flow state, because something that I learned recently on another podcast was that you can basically be in that meditative flow state without realizing it. And people say, oh, I can't meditate. But then they go swim in the ocean for 20 minutes, or they go and drive their motorbike, or they're drawing, or they're cooking and listening to music, and they don't pick up their phone and they don't talk to anyone. So that was really interesting for me to ask myself, like, how can I be in a flow state when I'm not just sat there in a Zen pose meditating? You've also mentioned that you like hypnosis, and that's something I'm a huge fan of as well. What I do want to ask you about is visualization, because I, again, never really felt like visualization worked. This was many years ago before I was on this journey. And now I understand the reason my visualization wasn't working was because I was visualizing with my conscious mind rather than visualizing with my whole body. I wasn't in the energy and the frequency of visualization. And really successful visualization happens when you feel like the future has already happened rather than just thinking about it. So I'd love your thoughts on visualization and how that ties into everything we're talking about.
Yes. I love visualization. I have an amazing story, actually. There was this time my luggage got lost and I was on my way back to my apartment and I was so sad. You know, losing your luggage is the worst, but I literally was like, okay, I'm just going to visualize having my luggage back. And not only like having it back, but how I'm going to feel. And there's a really amazing tip I'm just going to throw in right now for how to like visualize and really make it super effective. And then I'll talk about the science behind why we should do this, but it's using sound. So make the sound that you would make if you actually accomplish this goal. So I remember I was visualizing like, I would scream like, oh my God, thank God, I'm so happy. And literally making the sound you would make, it helps you get into the energetic state of actually receiving that thing or accomplishing whatever you're trying to visualize. And so for me, that was a game changer, is using sound, because that's kind of like such a primal thing, like laughter and screaming. Like we do that so subconsciously. And so literally, like no pun intended, we do it subconsciously. So we're kind of activating the subconscious mind and we're getting into that energy of it. And so the reason why visualization is really important, one, I know a lot of people say like the brain doesn't know the difference between what's happening in real life versus what's happening in our minds. Well, if you think about it, really, like nothing really is happening in life. We're not actually seeing anything. Everything we're actually seeing is being put together by the brain. And so really, it's like the exact same thing. We're just putting the image together mentally versus taking in light signals and putting the image together via the light signals. So we're consciously directing what we see versus just passively putting together the image that we see. And the reason why like visualization works, and definitely over time. So every time you visualize something, and especially like you said, getting into the subconscious energy of it. So like being in the feeling state is so important, not just like visualizing it and being like, okay, I'm seeing it happening. And this is true for all forms of manifestation. Like I don't think of manifesting as manifesting like specific things, but I think of it as like a feeling state. Like what we're really manifesting is becoming like who we want to be. And so feeling like how we want to feel when that happens. And that's the most important thing. And that really does tie into that deep subconscious wiring, because our feelings and our emotions are so dependent. Like those are some of the most subconscious things that we do, because I know for me, I just tend to get extremely excited about things like all the time. Like something happens and I just get so excited, and that's totally a subconscious reaction. I'm not telling myself like, oh, hey, I need to get super joyful right now. That's just a subconscious reaction that happens in my day to day. And so using your subconscious, like your feeling states, to actually get into that depth and into our brains and totally start to rewire. But then the visualization also, athletes use visualization to visualize their movements in sports. And then that helps them actually do the movement when they're actually out on the field or whatever. And I think the most important thing for visualization is just being relaxed. Like you definitely need to be, and like we've talked about, having those slower brain waves and being in flow. So I like to visualize as I'm falling asleep, or even toward the end of my meditation, if I'm meditating for 10 minutes, like the last 3 or 4 minutes, I'll just start visualizing things. But just making sure we're in a relaxed state, because we don't want to be resistant to it. We don't want to be putting up like, oh, that's not going to happen. We don't want to be putting up any mental blocks. We want to be really like in an open-minded state before we start to visualize.
Okay, I am literally loving all of this. And the sound thing is so interesting, because the way that I started to visualize was asking myself, like in the visualization, how would you tell someone that this had just happened? And it always comes back to sound, because I imagine like me turning to you or to my mom and being like, oh my God, look what just came in. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. That is sound, right? That's exactly what you just said. And I think sometimes people find it really hard to get into the feeling of how would I feel when that email comes into my inbox, or when I meet that person, or when they do whatever. But asking yourself, how would you feel about sharing it with the first person you tell, is like one of my hacks for people if they struggle with the visualization process. The other thing I think is so important is that point about how you need to be relaxed, because I would find it very difficult, like just coming off a podcast recording and then being like, okay, now I need to visualize. That's obviously because I'm not in the right brainwave state. But what I find is like, if I do like a wake and shake in the morning, and I know that you love this somatic shaking and energy release as well, I'll do like a wake and shake. I call it like the 3-3-3. So 3 minutes, which is just one song of like shaking and dancing around. And then I'll do like 3 minutes of meditating, which is just like me coming back into my body and coming back into my heart space. And then 3 minutes of visualizing. Like that is it, 3-3-3. But the shaking for me helps me like get into that state that I can then visualize. Do you have any thoughts on how you get yourself into a state when you can do it?
Yeah, I think we're very similar. That's why like when I always talk about my neuroscience back morning routine, I always meditate after I work out. And so we're kind of on the same wavelength on that one. And I also reminded of this when I went back to my yoga practice, like the meditation at the end, Shavasana, when you're laying there like corpse pose and you're just like meditating. That's at the end of yoga, not in the beginning. And I've always just done it naturally because I find it easier to clear my mind after I've moved my body. And so totally like shaking out your body and like for me, exercise or yoga and just like getting your body moving and releasing it all out of your body allows your mind to relax. And I think it's just really difficult if you have a lot of pent up energy or whatever's on your mind, if you can release it through your body, it's way easier to calm your mind, relax, and focus in meditation. And so totally, I'm with you 100% on that. Before meditation or before visualization, doing some sort of bodily movement, like dancing, shaking, exercising, whatever you do. Like I would always say, and when I'm in my coaching calls, I always tell clients, no matter what it is, even if you don't have time to work out, then you literally, that's the perfect little morning routine, like the 3-3-3. You don't have time for it. Like I just do some stretching, or do some jumping jacks, or literally I used to do like 5 sun salutations every morning when I woke up before I would go to lab when I was in school, because I didn't have much time, but I wanted to just move my body and connect with my breath, because that's another thing. It's like really connecting like your mind and your body and being conscious and aware.
I love that. We're both on exactly the same page. So yeah, guys, if you're listening to this, get shaking, get moving, and just get exercising. And I swear that Emily and I have the same energy. We're just like so happy and hyperactive and excited and just like having a great time all the time. And I put that down to us both loving exercising and doing these things. Like I posted a video about how I love somatic shaking and it always makes me feel better. And Emily replied being like, oh my God, me too. Like I'll just do it around my bedroom and I'll be like, yeah, me too. I'll just get up and do some jumping jacks. And I was like, we have exactly the same energy as each other.
It's really fun. Yeah.
But for people that maybe aren't feeling that high vibe energy, and don't get me wrong, I'm sure that both of us have been in lows and, well, for me, many times in my life. Let's talk about how it can be very difficult to make a habit or to do this rewiring when your body is stressed. Because I read something somewhere that if your nervous system is dysregulated or your body is in a high stress mode or a high cortisol mode for a sustained period of time, your brain can't lay new neural pathways. And you've told us today that it's not about erasing the old memories. It's about building the new neural pathways and then strengthening them and focusing on them and letting the other ones kind of like filter away. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So one thing that I immediately think of is just, it makes sense intuitively that if we are in survival mode, our brain uses a lot of energy, like a lot. And so our brain's not going to be using energy to form new connections in the brain. It's going to be using energy for survival and putting like energy toward that. And one thing that I always think of is like exercise. It increases BDNF and it helps, which is a nerve growth factor in the brain. So it literally helps our neurons grow and sprout new connections. And if we're like super stressed, then our brain isn't just, it's not trying to learn new things right now. It's trying to like keep us safe. And when we're in that, it's really fight or flight, survival mode, kind of like protective mode. We're not sponges to the world. We're very like focused on our internal state. And so I do like totally agree with that. And also just like having high amounts of stress, like chronic stress, it's just not good for our health in general. And that's not good for brain health. I had a concussion back in October. And I think that what for me was like the biggest kind of smack in the face. Like it does not matter what you do, because obviously like I have all these practices and I do everything. It doesn't matter what you do, but if your brain isn't healthy, then you won't be in the state that you want to be in. Like I was getting mad. I was having trouble sleeping. I was super emotional. And all it really was just like brain inflammation. And I'm doing all the right things. Like, you know, and I was like eating right and I had the right mindset and I do all the mental health stuff. But if we're not like taking care of our physical health, like our bodies and our brains, then it makes it extremely difficult to actually have good mental health.
First of all, I'm so sorry that you've had to go through that, because I used to work with a biohacking clinic and I've really watched the journey around concussion and like the impact that it can have. And I know that you're probably best set to know what to do, but still, like, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. And secondly, I'm so happy that you mentioned BDNF. So for anyone listening, BDNF is brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And the only reason that I know about this, other than working in this space, is because I actually launched a lion's mane company. Well, it's not my business, but like my old agency launched wellness brands. So I worked with them and I learned so much about how lion's mane can basically help increase BDNF, which can help increase neural pathways. But there are other things that you can do to increase BDNF. So I'd love to know your thoughts on, I guess, the free ways that people can do that, but maybe also any other supplements, like just generally for this whole rewiring journey that you think would be good for people to consider if they had the funds available.
Totally. So I think you kind of hit the nail on the head right there with lion's mane. That was the second thing. So exercise to me is the very first thing. Also, you see in people that exercise every day, we have bigger hippocampi. Our hippocampus for learning and memory, it's bigger. So let's get our body moving, and exercise is really, really good for you. And then in supplement form, I would think like lion's mane, or it's not technically a supplement, it's an adaptogen, but lion's mane is incredible for doing that. I've seen some preliminary research, some images of the effects of lion's mane on neural sprouting, and it's beautiful. So I love that. But also just like some more ways to increase neuroplasticity and brain rewiring. I think like doing things to confuse the brain is so important, like going to new places because novelty. So I think one more thing that's really important to know is that dopamine drives neuroplasticity as well. So that's with learning, right? You want to teach a dog a new trick, you reward them. You give them dopamine after they did it right, because that dopamine drives learning. So why is that? Probably because your brain wants to remember, like, oh, that was rewarding for us. Like, we want to remember that so we can go do it again next time. And then this also, like, dopamine isn't just reward. It's also just salience, which means in science terms, it just means like, look at me. And that's why, like, if you see something bad happen, you might get a lot of dopamine from that too, like a car accident, and you're never going to forget that either. It just helps drive learning and wire it in. And so anything that you do to boost dopamine can really help learning. So that's why, like, I think I heard it on probably like the Human Lab podcast once, but it like just makes a lot of sense intuitively. Like, you do a learning bout and then afterward you go do a cold plunge, you actually will remember the information that you learned before the cold plunge better than if you were to not do it. So that's why, like, a lot of times, like, they'll say, he used to say like, drink your coffee afterward, but that, for me, that just doesn't make sense. But dopamine drives learning. So anything that you can do to, like, obviously we don't want to be artificially boosting our dopamine all the time, but things like exercise and then caffeine when you're studying and cold exposure, things like that. And also like remembering, like, rewarding yourself. If you're trying to do something new, reward yourself when you do it right. Like, I'm trying to learn handstands right now, and I think one of the biggest things for learning something new, and I'm applying it to my handstands, is it really, like, neuroplasticity. If you are trying to wire something into the brain, and like, this is also with habit learning, it's all tied together. It really happens over time. It's like cramming for an exam the night before. If you try to get it all, learn it all, it's not going to stick. You're not altering neural pathways with one shot or with like 10 shots in one day. That's not how it's going to work. What's going to work is doing small bouts of learning frequently, more repetitions, the better, over time, because you got to give your brain the time. It's actually at nighttime during sleep when these neural pathways can be kind of solidified. And that's when our brain is like rejuvenating, especially with like new muscle movements. Those things are actually being replayed at night when we sleep in the brain. And then it helps to save those memories in the brain. So that's why sleep is so important for learning and memory and neuroplasticity as well. And so just giving yourself the time and grace. If you haven't broken this habit in like a week, that's why. It takes time for the brain. When we're younger, maybe it takes less time, but when we're older, it takes a little more time. And so just giving yourself the grace and remembering, and maybe end on a good note. I always try to end on a good note, especially with my handstands. I'm like, I got to end on a good one, because that's like what your brain's going to remember, because we have this like primacy, like the first and last effect, where you're going to remember the first and you remember the last the most. So try to end on a good note and just let your brain save that one into memory that way. And then also that's just dopamine to help it save in memory even more.
That is so interesting about the cold plunge. I never heard that before. That is a really interesting piece of information. And I think the point about repetition is so important. It's like, I always use the ski slope analogy. Like, you get to the top, you go down the ski slope that everyone else goes down. That's one's deeply wired into the mountain, deeply like creviced, whatever, but you're going off piste. So if you want to go off piste, you're going to create a new track. But if you kept going up and down the new track, up and down the new track, up and down the new track, then like over time, you built a new pathway, and then loads of other people will start going down it as well. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, everyone's moved over onto this like new run. And that's like the perfect way that I like to describe neuroplasticity to people that aren't experts. I think my final question for you is about the subconscious mind also being in the body. So I know that you mentioned earlier that basically your wiring is not just in your brain, it is throughout your whole body. I don't really know if I have a question here. So you might not have anything to say, but I think my final point is I really want people to understand that we are wired through our nervous system, which is through our whole body. And that was a big wake-up call for me, which was like, if I want to rewire, I have to work with my body. I have to release the energy and the emotion and the stress cycles that have not been completed because they get stored in my body. Do you have anything else to say about that, like mind-body connection before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest examples of this is just the fact that most of our serotonin is made in our gut. Like, I think if anything tells you that it's not just your brain, but also your body, it's that. Because a lot of people will ask me like, oh, I have such bad anxiety. They've tried all the medications and nothing's working. I'm like, okay, well, what's your diet like? And they tell me it's like terrible. And I'm like, okay, well, most of your serotonin is made in your gut. So you need to be taking care of your body and feeding your body like what it needs so that it can actually help your brain. And I think everything we've kind of talked about, like with exercise and with like, now I'm saying like diet and nutrition and like your lion's mane that you're going to take or is going to be like eaten. So like really just the fact that what we put into our bodies, not just what we put into our bodies, but what we do with our bodies, like exercise, like that all has a huge impact on our brains and neuroplasticity and our ability to rewire the brain. And we can store tension in different areas of the body. Like I love stretching to just release and like shaking, release. And that allows your brain to relax. And then you can absorb new information. So it's totally all tied together. And I also love your ski slope analogy because novelty is really just one of the most important things for neuroplasticity is just like doing new things, not getting stagnant or stuck and always evolving. And that's actually why I got into yoga like again and like my handstands again, because novelty is just so important and novelty also increases dopamine. So it's just a great way to keep yourself excited about life and fresh with life is to always be doing new things, confuse the brain, brush your teeth with the opposite hand. Like that activates neuroplasticity. Just do like little brain twisters, throw yourself in a tizzy because our brains like to be like comfortable and safe. And the more you can get it outside the comfort zone, the better. I know we're always like outside of our comfort zone, just like changing it up. But I actually was in a little bit of a mode like a few weeks ago where I was getting a little comfortable and then I was like, okay, I'm ready. And then now it's like insane. So, hey, I asked for it. And now my friend literally just said, hey, like you asked to be booked and busy. I was like, ask and you shall receive because I am now. So.
But it's so funny because I was exactly the same. I realized I'd really got into my comfort zone with the podcast. It was like I just had so many episodes and they were all banked on file and they were all there. And like I wasn't fully outside my comfort zone being like, what am I fascinated by? What do I want to research? I could not agree more. And then the second that I stepped outside my comfort zone and admitted that to myself and the universe, everything started to change. This course literally got downloaded into my brain. I was like, I need to record with you and this and I'm going to go here and like, everything has just picked up for both of us. So I guess, well, I actually really have to go now, but I just want you to tell us a tiny bit more about your exciting news, your end, because I know that you have been working on some stuff that everyone that is listening to Open House will take a ton of benefit from. So please tell me why you are so booked and busy and what you have going on.
So I have something really exciting coming very soon. I am going to be on TV. I can't talk about what show it is yet or anything, but I'm super excited about it. So I'm flying to LA tonight, literally tonight. And I'm really, really actually genuinely excited. I have a coaching program coming out. It's a 12-week program. And it's everything that I've done in a nutshell so that you don't have to like spend all the time researching and learning about all this stuff. Like it's all laid out. And I'm so excited to just actually have a community as well that people can just be a part of and we can all help each other achieve our goals and support each other. And so I'm going to be having like sort of an inner circle and some other exciting things coming very soon. So I really cannot wait for that. And then a podcast is also on its way. That one is like after the first two. So I have a bunch of things coming that I'm really excited about. So stay tuned and you can definitely like go to my Instagram because I'll be posting all about it too.
She is booked and busy for sure. Cannot wait to watch you on TV. I cannot wait. That will be so amazing. And yeah, we're going to link everything in the show notes. So if anyone wants to go and work with Emily, you can do that. But other than that, thank you so much. I have missed you. I feel like we haven't done a podcast together in ages. So I'm so happy to have done this with you. And we keep saying that hopefully the next one we do will be in person, together, in a studio, hopefully in Florida, if not in LA. So stay tuned, everyone. Hopefully we'll be together in person soon. But until then, thank you so much. Thank you for everything. And I will speak to you soon.